Greetings, everybody. Tonight we're talking with Lorena and Dave Lyon of Lyon Paranormal. First of all, say g'day.
G'day.
How you going?
How you going, Lyons?
Good, thanks, Paul. Yourself?
Excellent, thanks.
And as always, I've got Paul here helping me conduct an interview. And we all know each other. We're all quite long-time friends. I guess like we've known the Lyons for a good year now.
Oh, even more than that. I think we've been working together for quite a while now.
Yeah,
it'd be at least a year and a half to 2 years now.
Yeah,
so I'd say nearly two. Yeah, because we met Ash on the first Adelaide jail tour, didn't we?
Yeah.
So that would be over 2 years ago now.
Mm. See, time with you guys just flies past so quick, I don't even know.
And we spent a lot of time when we done the Martindale thing together as well, so that was a bit of extra time.
That was good, yeah.
That was good. And something's going to be done with that very shortly. But we'll get back into this. So, very first question that everyone's going to ask is, why an interest in the paranormal for you guys, and what got you interested in starting your own paranormal investigation team?
Well, I've been interested in paranormal for a long time, probably since I was about 10, just after my father died. I had a few experiences in my home. And then later on through the years, I had a few experiences. And that's pretty well it. That's what sort of started my interest in the paranormal. What really escalated it was one day I was taking a photo down in the river and I captured a bit of an apparition. And that's the way it led me into the paranormal field of investigating.
Yeah, well, I've pretty well just always been interested in the paranormal. I guess for me, always been more of a, you know, what is on the other side, and whether that be spirit or whether there is just a better place that we go to. So I've always been interested in that sort of thing. The spirit connection and talking to spirit has always intrigued me, and I've always been really interested in that side of it as well. And I guess just, you know, I was with Dave when we were up at the river and taking these shots. We'd just gone out to take some photos of the sunset. And we come back with this random thing in the photo that we just had no explanation for. Then after that, we sort of started just, you know, looking around, seeing what was out there. We went to Sydney and we did a tour of the quarantine station over in Sydney. And then we come back, and once we sort of got back, we went, well, this is, you know, something that we can do together and, you know, something that we're both really interested in, and we can get out there and try and see if we can find some answers to, you know, both Dave's, what Dave's experiences are, and for me, what my curiosity and, you know, trying to find out what is out there.
So I guess Lyon Paranormal, well, that's your surname. Was it just something that just happened, or did you sit down and go, come on, let's formally make ourselves a team?
It's quite hard to join into a paranormal team sometimes, especially for us, because we got little children and we can't always attend to go everywhere. So we went, we'll just make our own.
And it was easy because, you know, if it's just, well, we have got a third team member, which is Lynn Eubank. She comes out with us when she can. Again, she's got commitments with children and stuff like that as well. So she can't, unfortunately, she can't always make the things that we go to. But I guess mainly just with me and Dave, it's more closer. We don't tend to have too many problems between the two of us. And
no, that's right.
It just works well together. And I think it works really well because we're so interested in it and we try and fit it in when we can. So
yeah,
you say you work well together, but why do I sometimes hear the name Solo Paranormal thrown about?
that's just a good joke, I think.
Yeah, that's just a bit of a joke that Dave's decided to derive to try and make it look like I don't do anything when we're out there. Dave is, you know, like, I mean, there's, like I said, there's only two of us, sometimes three of us that get out there. And Dave's very technically orientated, so you know, he likes to set up a whole CCTV system, and you know, with like six or seven cameras around the place, if not more. I've got absolutely no idea how to do all that sort of stuff. He just does it all, and I just end up pottering around, cooking barbecues, or you know, chatting to people, updating Facebook, all that sort of stuff. Like, he does all the hard work, and I think it was actually Paul that said something to him, and you just Dave just turned around and said, "Oh, don't worry, it's a new team called Solo Paranormal."
It's easier sometimes when they stay out of my way.
Actually, Dave is probably the most thorough reviewer I've ever met in my life. That the amount of footage he takes at a location, and then to review it all, that must be so hard.
It is, especially when I'm doing it at home with little children. But at this previous stage, I'm lucky enough that I do stay home with the children, so I do have a bit of spare time on my hands, so it works out quite well. It gives me something to do.
How long a session can you sit there and review stuff for? What's the longest you've gone without a break?
I don't know, but I've woken up a couple of times. fast asleep on the couch, and it's like 3 hours are gone that I've been asleep for or something. Yeah. I'd like to do it in, you know, an hour sessions, usually half an hour to an hour, and that way you don't get too fatigued and your eyes just don't blend into mush from just watching the screen for too long.
Yeah, sometimes when you watch it for too long, things can just start looking the same, and you might, you know, miss things that sort of pop up. And
yeah, I like to be thorough.
That's probably the hardest thing I've ever found, is to watch, you know, 8 to 10 hours of stationary footage. You know, it's suicidal.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. It's hard work. That's why when sometimes, you know, you go to these places and you get a bit of interaction from a rat or something like that, you get pretty excited because, you know, you've been watching this footage for like 5 or 6 hours of absolutely nothing, and then you get a rat come along. It's like, oh, look what we got, it's a rat. But it just breaks the monotony of, you know, watching it for so long, I think.
But I do try and keep my footage down. I try and maximise my footage for about 10 hours per camera. So if I've got 8 cameras set up, that's about 2 weeks' worth of footage to look at, about 80 hours, if not longer.
That's crazy. And you're not just doing footage as a visual thing. You also take a lot of cameras. Like, you got a pretty sweet camera setup, I believe. Well, I like it, with remote controls and stuff like that. Do you find that cameras are, I guess, your favourite piece of equipment to use?
I'd say they're our most productive. Yes, they definitely got more out of our cameras than anything.
Well, most of our evidence, I would say, we've got from our still shot cameras more than we have the video cameras. Like, we've picked up some stuff on the video cameras, but we've been able to explain all of that, you know, whether it be cobwebs flying in the dark or just dust from wind or rats, like, you know, like I said, you know, rat comes along and bumps the camera. But with our still cameras, there's a bit of evidence and stuff there that we've got that we just can't explain.
Yeah. So, but there is a couple of things we have got on video that we can't explain too.
Mm.
But at least with still cameras, you get a shot and you can look at that shot and analyse it and go, well, that's quite interesting.
Mm. We just had a little Stillpix camera that was probably one of the first digital cameras we ever bought, and Dave just recently turned that into a full spectrum camera. So the last investigation that we did, we used that a fair bit and got some shots out of that, so looking forward to using that again the next time we go somewhere, because we've only really used that once, haven't we?
Yeah.
And then the other camera we use is just a Canon, you know, just a normal camera that we bought, and we've got some interesting stuff off of that as well. And that's just a normal camera, so, you know, it doesn't mean that you have to go out and spend hundreds and hundreds or thousands of dollars on cameras, because you can just have a basic normal camera and it will pick it up.
Well, when we first started off, we had 2 digital cameras and a voice recorder, and that was it. And we caught still photos then, and that's where it escalated. Once we caught a couple of photos, and off we went.
Well, that's how a lot of people start. I know, as a paranormal investigator, I've invested a lot of time and a lot of money into researching the paranormal, and I've invited so many ghosts to come, or spirits to come and see me, or to show themselves to me. You're the only investigator that I know who has actually shunned them or told them to rack off.
Yeah, that was only because it was in our home.
Come on, you have a love-hate relationship with spirits, Dave.
Yeah, I do. Sometimes I think they avoid me, but, you know, then that's their problem. But, yeah, that spirit was in our home that we were renting at the time, and it started becoming annoying, honestly, to tell you the truth, because every couple of days I'd come home from work and the back door would be wide open, you know. It was just a matter of time before someone broke into our house. And then one night I actually seen it in our room. So I quite well asked it to leave, and it did.
You did not just ask it to leave. You used a swear word.
You used the F-bomb.
You F-bombed the ghost, and it never came back.
But it worked. It didn't come back after that, so which I was happy about, because I was getting blamed for leaving the door open.
I've never heard so much blue language around a paranormal investigator, and none of it really coming from you. It's like we've been at Tailem Town and the Ben Elba Hotel listening to the Ghost Box, and it's throwing at just about everything at Dave, like F words, C words, the works.
Yeah. No, he tends to attract the vocal ones, that's for sure. But I think that's because of what he throws at them. So it definitely makes it interesting.
Well, say...
He reckons he's nice.
I am.
Well, now that you said that the ghost went away, it totally blew away my next question was, now that you're an investigator, would you ever consider going back to the place you were renting and trying to investigate that location? Because you know it was haunted.
I'd still like to go back there. Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, he didn't see it again, it doesn't mean that it actually left. It just means that it didn't show itself again. So, and I really don't think that we were there much longer after that. We kind of weren't there, I don't think, much longer after that happened anyway.
Probably another 2 or 3 months before we moved.
Yeah, no, I'd definitely like to go back there with, you know, all the equipment that we've got now. And sit there and, you know, see if we could pick something up. That would definitely be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Because quite often we'd sit there at night time and see things wandering down the hallway and, you know, the door would get left open frequently, or wouldn't get left open. It was closed. I made sure I closed it in the morning, and it would be open, you know, by the time that Dave got home in the afternoon from work.
But the funny thing is, see, the dog never used to come inside when the door was left open. But once I come home, the dog would come inside. So it was a bit like our dog loved coming inside. Had every opportunity to come inside and be in there, but the door would be wide open. The dog would be out in the backyard.
Well, as a team, you've been to some pretty spectacular locations. We've tagged along with some of them. Some of those would happen to be jails, and that's what we're talking about today as our topic for the podcast. What do you guys think? Do you think jails, along with a lot of the other places you go to, are more, well, haunted? Is there more spiritual activity taking places in locations of incarceration?
I guess every place is different, you know, and I guess it depends on, you know, how many people have actually passed there. Well, they don't, like I said, don't even have to have passed there to be there. You know, I mean, you could go to an asylum, which is not necessarily a jail of incarceration, but an asylum is a different place where, you know, hundreds of thousands of people have gone through over the years and probably get just as much activity. So I don't think it's necessarily contained to jails.
We've been to a couple of jails, and myself, I've had one experience at a jail. I had like a cold breeze go through me, and that was at the Adelaide jail. But the thing about ghost hunting, as you know yourself, it's in the evidence. When I've come home and I've looked at our photos and our video footage, that's where I tend to find the things that are a bit out of the ordinary in our photos or in our video footage. So a lot of the time I can walk around the place and not feel anything at all, where other people, you know, two cells down are having a bit of an experience or can feel something. So it's very hard to say whether they're more active or not, really.
I think it's a bit in hit and miss, like any other location, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I personally believe jails are a great location, basically because the size of them. It does isolate you from neighbours, other sorts of background noises for your EVP sessions and that. We do have a bit of a problem with our Adelaide jail with the nightclub being so close, which is, it does affect EVPs if you're doing it on a weekend.
And I do find myself as well that it depends how many people you have along and how noisy they are, because jails are like the Adelaide jail itself, I found to be quite echoey because obviously it's empty to start with, and that's the way they're designed. They're just big hallways and little rooms, pretty well made all of concrete and bars. So it's but the feeling itself of a jail, like when you enter the through the gates and it's like I'm in a jail, subconsciously it already feels eerie, I think.
Yeah.
So that's what attracts you to the location, the nostalgia of actually being in a jail?
I think it's the mystery of what happened in the location for so long, over so, you know, so many period of years or whatever, you know, the torture and the pain and the suffering and, you know, the obviously there were some murders in jails and, you know, beatings and bashings and hangings and all sorts of terrible things happen in there. So, you know, I think it's a mixture of that going into this, you know, large location that's just empty. There's no one in there other than you and a few other people that have gone in to investigate.
And plus, you've got to be honest, in Adelaide, there's really not a lot of haunted places, and jails seem to be there up on the top of the list in Adelaide, really. So, yeah, I mean, there's not many places, you know, they're not falling out of the woodwork like they are in America.
Yeah, we're a bit cut short for locations here in South Australia like that, where, you know, you can get a decent night in, you know, locked down in inside a location where you can either go in as yourself, you know, as your team, or, you know, take a couple of other teams with you and have a good night investigating.
So we talked a bit about Adelaide Jail and your experience there. What about some of the other places of detention or incarceration have you guys visited around South Australia and the country? And this can be, say, like the quarantine stations or asylums, if you will. What are some of the other places you've gone to, and what are some of your favourites?
We've been to Gladstone Jail, which is in the north of South Australia in the Flinders Ranges. So we've been there a couple of times. Redruth Jail, which is in Burra, and again, that's to the north of Adelaide. We've been to the Sydney Quarantine Station and the Torrens Island Quarantine Station, which is Torrens Island is here in South Australia. That one I was really keen to get to because it's not something that gets opened up to the public very often. It's only open once a year and for a few days in a month, so I was quite keen to get over there. We live actually quite close to Torrens Island, and I have lived here all my life, which I'm not going to tell you how long that is, but quite a long time. And I didn't even know that place existed, so no, I knew that they had their power station over there, but I didn't even know that there was a quarantine station over there or that the place even existed. So I was really keen to get over there and have a look at that. So we've done that.
Yeah.
Probably only lived 400 or 500 metres away from it too.
a little bit more than that. You know, consider like if we could actually go across the river, then yeah, it's like jump in a canoe and go over there.
What about some of the evidence you guys have captured? Now, I know you've captured some stuff down at the Sydney quarantine station, and I'm sure you've captured some stuff in other places of, well, detention. Tell us a little bit about some of that and some of your experiences.
From Adelaide Jail, we've got a couple of photos.
Oh, yeah, we've got a couple of interesting shots.
A couple of interesting shots from Adelaide Jail.
There was one that Dave took of a cell, one of the cells there that was closed up, but they had the latch thing on the door was open that they used to serve the food through. Did you hear something in there?
Yeah.
It made you put the camera up and take a shot through the hole.
Yeah.
And then when we got home, that shot was, there was actually like a mist inside the cell. So how that got in there, I don't know, because there is no windows or open windows for, you know, fog or anything to come in. And the next shot was perfectly clear. So
yeah.
That was interesting. We got a strange shadow on one of the chairs in the
remand
centre.
Yeah.
Of Adelaide Jail. It was another shot that we got.
And I got a photo. It's got like a bit of a shape of a woman in the women's area, the women's block in the very back library. And we got another load of mist in between the walls towards the hanging area.
yeah, you know the alleyway that you walk down to the Hanging Tower? It's sort of like a mist sort of happening down there as well on one of the shots. Again, every other shot down there was perfectly clear. It was a perfectly clear night. And we got this one shot that was quite misty down there. So, and then we had that experience where we were, you know, down the stairs.
Yeah.
We were getting a few hits on the K2 that night down the bottom of the stairs as well. So that was really cool, though, for something to happen upstairs. And it was almost like it just, you know, came running down the stairs and basically ran out again, didn't it?
Yeah. A lot of it's very hard to say. Like, I went through a lot of footage from Gladstone and, you know, some weird things happen in your cameras and you look at it and you think, what could that be? Or, you know, it's not like any dust I've seen or, you know, but you can't say either way yes and you can't say no. So when you're looking for things that you can't see, it's very hard to get a lot of proof, really. Mm. But you do come up with the odd photo. It just goes, well, that sort of blew me away, really, because that cannot be explained.
The first time we went to Gladstone, I sort of came back from there going, I don't think that place is haunted. Like, I didn't feel anything there. It was just a normal night. Not that I normally would spend a night in jail, but it was just a normal night. Like, I didn't feel weird. It was just, I actually felt really calm and relaxed there. The second time we went back and they opened up the drunk tank, that was completely different. We were walking around in a big group and we all went into the drunk tank. And I think I was in there for like a whole, I don't know, 10 seconds. I couldn't breathe. My chest had gone really, really tight. I just felt so uncomfortable and felt really, really horrible. I had to get out of that area. Once I got out of that area, I felt absolutely fine again and didn't feel it again for the rest of the night because I refused to go back in there. The next morning, I'd gone into the kitchen area and the drunk tank was still open. And I'd gone into the kitchen area to get something out because we were getting breakfast organised, and I seen a black figure run through that drunk tank. So I was standing there and seen it run across. It was that clear that I actually went up and stood at the doorway. I was too scared to go in because there was no one else there. But I stood at the doorway and I said, look, I actually called out and said, hello, is anyone there? I didn't hear anything. And then I said it again and I actually said, is someone playing games with me? And there was nothing there. But I definitely saw something run across there. So the next time we go back there, I'm going to toughen up a bit, I think, and actually go in there and spend a bit more time in that area because that was really freaky.
And really freaky. Both times I wasn't there, I was being solo paranormal.
I find it interesting, and do you find it interesting that in this entire jail complex of Gladstone where people have died, there's a little hospital or infirmary. There's an area where an execution took place. There's a section that was locked up with Aboriginals who really don't take to being locked up. But do you find it interesting that it's the drunk tank and that kitchen area that had the most activity take place in it?
Yeah, I do. Like, I mean, we spent some time in solitary confinement and in that room that you're talking about where they would keep all the Indigenous prisoners together. And we kind of got nothing in there, you know, we weren't getting anything happening.
No.
You know, and even sort of down in the, like where they had the infirmary, we went into the cells, the suicide cells where the prisoners had committed suicide, and they're two cells that face each other in the same cell block, so basically opposite each other, which is weird in itself. And we didn't get anything in there. But, you know, you go into the kitchen area, which probably wouldn't have really had prisoners being housed in it. You know, they were just in there for meals or whatever. And then that little section off to the side where they would keep all the drunks, and you get the most activity. So maybe they were just typical Aussies and like to eat and drink, and that's where they've gone back.
Mm. I mean, myself, if I was a ghost hanging in a prison, I mean, I don't think I'd like to lock myself in a cell anyway.
Yeah, you wouldn't.
So you go hang out and be sociable in the kitchen.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you wouldn't really, you know, if you're going to come back and haunt somewhere, you don't want to be locked up in solitary confinement where you're already locked up for 16 years anyway.
But realistically, what, you know, it's so hard to explain. It's, why would you come back to a jail anyway? Why wouldn't you leave? There's so many questions. No answers, really.
I mean, I've got my own theory as to why the drunk tank was so active that night, and that's because it's not an area that's normally opened up to the public. Mm. It's normally locked up and closed, and it's not normally accessed to the public. So it's almost like the theory of, you know, start renovating and, you know, it brings the spirits out and, you know, you start getting activity in the house. So basically he opened up that iron gate, people started going in there. And we did have quite a few mediums with us that night, and they tend to stir things up a bit as well, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, the iron gate got opened. We all got let in there. There was mediums in there stirring up activity and whatever. So I think that's why I experienced what I experienced in there. And I'm pretty sure a few of the other teams got a fair bit of stuff happening in that area as well. And I sort of thought about it afterwards, and I thought that's probably why that occurred so much in there, was because it's not an area that's usually accessed by people. So they sort of, you know, come to the party and gave us some action.
With locations, the sheer size of a jail and our limited time when we are investigating, how do you go about picking which location you're going to concentrate the investigation on?
Well, that's reasonably hard. Because, as you know, I like to set up cameras outside and cross vast areas and put cameras where people usually don't put cameras to see if I can capture stuff. So it all depends on the weather. Usually I do have a game plan before I leave home, but a lot of times they change. Like last time I set up all my cameras around the big shed, and next minute we had five motorbikes coming in and inside of the shed and just, you know, so everything doesn't go to plan, so usually you just end up winging it.
Lorena, do you have a thought on that matter?
I just generally follow solo. yeah, we're sort of, you know, I guess we'll, you know, Dave will set up his gear where he wants it set up and whatever, and I will, while he's doing that, I actually aren't, you know, spending most of the time socialising. I'm kind of wandering around and having a look at the location and trying to find out what I can about the different areas and sort of figure out where I think that we should perhaps, you know, go first. And I will bring that back and say to Dave, well, you know, let's go and look at this area first or whatever, and kind of work it from there. So
I'll occasionally send her out on an errand or two, like grab me a coffee and stuff like that. So, yeah, it works out well, really. I enjoy it.
And no girly talk around the barbecue.
No, that's right. That's right. Yeah, women can't cook barbecues. We're still waiting to see Ash do it.
I also noticed last time we were at Gladstone, you were using some sort of board to try to communicate with the spirits.
Yeah. It's just another form or way to try and communicate with spirit. It's not a Ouija board. I actually don't like Ouija boards. This is a
Ouija board with a different name.
What's it called? A psychic
was it
board.
An angel board or a psychic board?
Psychic board, yeah. Psychic board.
Psychic.
So, you know, I mean, you have to protect yourself before you use it, and you have to get in the right frame of mind and all that sort of thing. And it's more of a, like, it doesn't spell out words or whatever, but it's, I guess it's the same sort of concept as a Ouija board. You can use a, it's got like a, I don't know what you call it, a little glass thing that you push around.
It's a plug.
Yeah.
And you're not supposed to push it.
Well, don't let you push around, but it's supposed to move around, or spirit can move to communicate with you and tell you different things. So Lynn, who's on our team, is a bit of a sensitive. It's actually her board, but it lives here. So we just thought that we'd give it a whirl. And we chose the kitchen area because that is the area that has had, you know, a fair bit of activity. But I think that there was too much activity going on that night with other teams and stuff like that. So it really needs to be probably done in an area where you're not going to get disrupted or interrupted people sort of walking in or out. So most paranormal teams have their electronic equipment that they use to gather their evidence. This is just another tool. It's another alternative. You know, I'm not saying that it does work. I'm not saying it doesn't work. It's just something that we can try, and if we get something out of it, we do. We didn't get anything that night. And I probably wouldn't use it with anyone else other than Lynn. I trust her solely, and I know that she's not going to. I mean, I'd probably use it with Dave as well because I trust him as well. But, you know, I know that they're not going to move the marker around for the fun of it. You know, we're just going, we're going to get a genuine result out of it. And if that genuine result is absolutely nothing happens, then absolutely nothing happens.
Final question about jails, or Paul might have a final one after this. I would like you guys to think of all the jails you've been to and take the top three in your mind and rate them in order of creepiness.
That's a bit hard because even the creepiest places I don't find creepy.
Well, okay, Lorena. This is where a question for Lorena then.
It would probably have to be the absolute, like the creepiest one I've probably been to would have to definitely be Port Arthur. Following that would be the Sydney Quarantine Station.
That's not a jail.
But no, but it's a place of incarceration.
Oh, yeah.
The third one, see, that's hard because I don't think Adelaide Jail was creepy. I didn't think Gladstone was, definitely wasn't. Redreef definitely wasn't. Adelaide, if I had to pick between Adelaide and Gladstone, I'd say Adelaide.
Yep.
Only because I think that there's been a lot more, there was a lot more nastier prisoners at Adelaide. So, and there's a lot more, you know, occurrences that happened at Adelaide Jail. Like Gladstone was kind of the retirement home for prisoners.
Yeah.
Whereas Adelaide Jail, they had, you know, they had all the murderers and the...
Adelaide Jail's older too, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, you know, they had all the hangings there and stuff like that. So I would probably go with Adelaide.
The thing is, we didn't really get to spend a long enough time in the Adelaide Jail.
Mm.
I would like to go back to Adelaide Jail and spend the whole night.
Spend more time there.
More time, it would be really good, yeah. Mm. So that's what I was saying before, you know. Adelaide's quite restricted in a way of where we've got to go.
Do you guys have anything you want to add about jails at all?
No.
We always wrap up our shows with three questions we ask all our guests. Now, you've probably listened to the show, so you probably want to know what these questions are in advance, but we'll get Paul to ask the first one.
Okay, so Dave, because you are the tech guy, what is your favourite piece of equipment?
It's got to be my Canon camera.
Why specifically the Canon?
I don't know. It seems to take the best shots, yeah, the clearest. Yeah, it just gives me good results.
Okay. Lorena, what do you like the most?
I actually really like working with the Spirit Box, believe it or not. But I do like probably the stuff that you can, you know, the K2 meters, I guess. You know, I've been in plenty of locations where there's just, you know, no power, nothing, and these things are going off their dial. So trying to figure out what's sort of setting them off.
Yeah, see, I go, oh, that's something. That's just... yeah,
did you turn your phone off?
Yeah.
But, you know, when all that stuff's off and you're in the middle of nowhere and these things are going off, you know, there's got to be some explanation to it. They're probably my most favourite because I think they're fun.
What about the funniest thing that's happened on an investigation for you guys?
I'm going to say that would have to be at Martindale when we were in the coach house and you guys were actually with us and we were using the ovulus. And we asked for a name. We said, can you tell us who you are? And we got the name Horse. we then started having a full-on conversation with this horse in the coach house, which is really quite freaky because after when I was listening to all the footage, listening to the recording of it, it actually really made quite a lot of sense to the location that we were in. You know, obviously we were in a coach house where they used to, you know, store horses and stuff like that, but it gave us the word tragic, gave us the word death, yeah, and then it gave us August, and there was something else, or a name, something with the name of the bee or something, and it all related to the death of the owner of the property who fell and drowned in the river, and it actually happened in August. So that was really quite freaky, but that was probably the funniest thing that happened that night because we were just being stupid, really. We weren't being serious at all. Once we got that name Horse, we were just cracking up and we were just, you know, getting all these stupid things and we weren't really paying attention to what the populace was saying. And it wasn't until I listened to it afterwards, you know, in the next couple of days that I went, Oh, maybe we were actually getting something decent here and we were just being all silly.
I must say, I have fun every time we go out. I enjoy myself thoroughly.
You're always looking like you're having a jolly old time, Dave.
Once I've set up my cameras and everything's going, the rest of the night's beautiful.
Oh, and our final question is, if you could go to any location, where would it be?
In Australia?
No. Or in the world? Anywhere, anywhere you want. It doesn't even have to be in the world, really.
It doesn't have to be in the world. I don't know. I reckon America would be good, but only because...
Can you be a little bit more specific than that? We're talking about a haunted location. So, you know, Waverly Hills or...
Yeah, that'd be very interesting.
I didn't want to put the words in your mouth. Go on.
In Australia, I'd like to go back to the Sydney quarantine station to spend a night or two nights there, just full-on investigating. I think that'd be a great place to investigate. I mean, we went there for a tour, and just in the 2 hours that we were there in the tour, I had about 4 personal experiences, I reckon, and come home with some decent photographs. So, yeah, I'd say Sydney Quarantine Station.
For me, in Australia, I'd like to go to Monte Cristo in Junie, New South Wales. That's probably the place. Oh, and the other one that I really want to go to is Ararat, DJ Ward and Ararat. They're two locations I'd really like to do in Australia. Overseas, I'd like to go to, I'm pretty sure it's in Bolivia, and go to Dracula's Castle.
It's another new one for us, I believe.
Yeah. Would be awesome.
We'll have to put that on our bucket list too.
I mean, I could spend a good 12 months in Scotland and Ireland going around to other locations there as well. But, yeah, I think Dracula's Castle would be just amazing. I'd really like to go there.
If I had the money, I'd spend the rest of my life doing it.
Yeah.
One non-stop ghost hunt. You know, we live in the real world, so it just doesn't happen.
Get our own lion bus and away we go.
Yeah, the lion bus. You can make it real novelty, have it shaped like a lion. Or
make sure there's a couple of seats spare for us as well.
That's right.
Definitely.
We'll buy a ticket. Well, thank you very much for talking to us. And people that might want to find you online somewhere, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, we have a Facebook page called Lion Paranormal, obviously.
Yeah,
they can email us as well at lionparanormal@gmail.com.au.
Excellent. And any chance for a website in the future? I know Dave's been dabbling with such things.
Yes. Yeah, we're getting there. We're getting there. I'll just wait till I get a little bit better at it, I think. And, yeah, a bit more evidence to put up there and work out a few things. And, yeah, there'll be a website eventually.
Excellent. So you're getting very good with your photo manipulation.
Oh, I'm loving Photoshop. I'm just doing my whole course. So it's given me some, good mucking around skills. So.
Excellent. Well, thank you once again for talking to us. And we will speak to you guys again sometime soon.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Alrighty.